You're listening to a highlight from the Yishai Fleisher Show on Voice of Israel.
All right, folks, you are listening to the Yishai Fleisher Show here on Voice of Israel, broadcasting live from Jerusalem to the world, and you're a part of it wherever you are. Today is Thursday. We are getting ready for Shabbat. We are getting ready for that holy day, and we're getting ready for the reading of the Torah portion, and that means that we find out what God wills for us and how he thinks the world should run itself. He created a world, and yes, he indeed did send us down an owner's manual, thank God. And Emmanuel, does that sound like Emmanuel? Emmanuel means with us is God. And the only way we know that with us is God is because he sent us this manual. So Emmanuel is the manual. With us is the manual for navigating this unbelievably tumultuous, tricky, and barely understandable world. How much of this world is really ours to understand, really? Are we deciding who we're going to be, how we're going to look, which world we come into? Did we decide that human beings have arms and legs? Do we have any understanding, really? We have such a small, limited spectrum of understanding, and that spectrum we have to master. And that's why we have a master with us. In studio, we have Rabbi Mike Foyer for Spiritual Cafe. Rabbi Mike, welcome to the program.
Thanks, but you can call me Master Mike from now on.
Master Mike, and Rabbi Mike, of course, you are the educational director of Beit Midrash Sulam Yaakov in beautiful Nachlaot, Jerusalem, Israel. And we are entering a one of those blueprint Torah portions called... Are we doing both Vayikal Pekudei this year?
It is a double portion.
Double portion.
A great blessing. And it is the special reading of Parshat Parah.
Right. Okay. So first we have the completion of the tabernacle, the creation of all the vestments and the vessels, the completion of it, and then the very, I'm sure you love this part, where the cloud descends,
yes.
God's kind of glory descends upon this, like, completed thing. It's like, once, like, the last plug, the last chip, the last spark
wire,
plug,
right.
Yeah, is like plugged, it's like, the thing turns on, it's like, it's alive!
Right, well, actually, it doesn't happen right away, you know.
How does it happen?
Well, you got to bring down the blessing first, right? That's everybody's so worried that once they finish, nothing happens, and Moshe has to teach his brother Aaron how to give blessing. And so something very deep in terms of what you're saying, in being of the master, the part of the world which we've been given to master, is that in the end of the day, it's not the techniques that really matter. You could have a full grasp from the owner's manual. You could understand all the laws, physics, metaphysics. Take your pick. If you don't understand that the purpose is to bring down blessing, then the thing's not going
to
work.
Come on down. That's what we say to God. When we finish the tabernacle, we're like, come on down. We want your Shekhinah. We want it right here.
That's what it's for.
And that is what it's for. And when you read the Torah, you're thinking to yourself, this thing is complex. My God, this whole thing is complex. And then you think to yourself, like, why did God, you know, have such a complex system of what a tabernacle is supposed to look like and what these vestments of the priest is supposed to look like. But then when you look at God's world, that's what I was beginning with, it is unstoppably complex. Mm-hmm. God loves depth and complexity. That's the way he created the world. He created with a lot of complexity. And in all this complexity, there's also the issue that is so hard for us to master today, which is the issue of contamination and impurity.
Mm-hmm.
Emanating from like a dead body. If you come in contact with a dead body, you become ritually impure.
Yeah, I would say it's deep in that. Our notions of pure and impure are so distant from us.
Right.
Because we live in a world that's kind of made a principle out of breaking down boundaries. And one of the things that we see in the Torah is that purity and impurity are all about clarity of boundary. And the ultimate boundary for humanity is death.
It's interesting you say that. It's interesting because I had Aleph Bet Yoshua on, a famous Israeli author and really one of the spokesmen of the left. And he said to me, do you know what Zionism is in one word? And I'm like, what? He's like, boundaries. We have to have boundaries. We have to have our land. We have to know what it is. And the disease of anti-Semitism always comes because we don't have our boundaries, because they're not clear.
That's an interesting assertion coming from a tradition of a people who broke every boundary they could.
That's what he said. He said it's the boundarylessness of the Jewish people that caused people to hate them, their ability to kind of transcend through.
And he really thought that was going to change when we had a state with borders?
Well, that was the original Zionist idea, right? Once you get kind of normalized. And I would assert that part of the hate against the Jewish people today comes from the fact that we have made it unclear where we're going to be. The fact that we've allowed the world to believe that we could give away a chunk of our land. It's not our homeland.
Yeah, that uncertainty. But I think it's much deeper than that. I mean, as God's representative in the world, we're always the representative of the unbounded. Mm-hmm. Both the Maharal, the great spiritual teacher at the end of or the beginning of the 17th century, and our master Rav Kook, right, the great spiritual teacher of the beginning of the 20th century, said the same thing, that we represent the infinite within the finite. So I think it's
the infinite within the finite is like the soul within the body.
In a sense, but it's more in a more simple sense of the unlimited potential. The unlimited potential. I had a student say a very funny thing.
Unlimited potential really comes in its best form in this world when it's kind of embodied.
It has to be embodied in order to be accessible. But at the very same time, the reason that Am Yisrael represents ultimately a revolutionary consciousness is because we're always going to be against the grain.
Right.
I mean, it's a big question I hold, whether normal is even a reasonable aspiration for us. I don't think it is. You know, I had a student said to me the other day, he's like, there's a book called Anti-Judaism. You heard this book?
No.
Very powerful history of the role of the Jews in shaping European consciousness through the ages. Yeah. But anyway, he said he just finished it, and he said that what he walked away with was this insane vision of these 23-year-olds in Europe in the, you know, the 19th century who thought against the history of 2,000 years they were going to be normal. And even more than that, I would challenge, and I did challenge him on this, is why is normal an aspiration that we need to desire?
Well, I think that it's, I don't know what exactly normal means, but there was definitely a sense of a lack of health and lack of embodiment.
Well, lack of embodiment and normal. I mean, look.
And you said the soul within the body. You said the infinite within the finite. But the Kuzari has a different take on it, which is the heart within the body.
Yeah, but don't make no mistake. In medieval philosophy, the heart is the seat of the intellect.
Right.
Right. I mean, it's the source of life, which flows outward from the heart into the body. And it's also the source of feeling and knowledge. So it is the infinite. It's what gives life to, mm-hmm. you know, if you try to figure out what life is by dissecting a cat, you've kind of defeated your purpose with the first stroke.
Right.
Right. In the same way, to try to put your finger on what Am Yisrael is in the world and to give us a specific role in place, I think it's a destructive effort. I mean, we need embodiment, absolutely. But embodiment in life is constantly growing and changing.
Right. This is the decree of the Torah, which Hashem had commanded, saying, speak to the children of Israel, and they shall take to you a completely red cow, which is without blemish, and upon it a yoke has not come. These are the words that we read this Shabbat, not in our Torah portion, but additional words from a different part, from the book of Numbers, 19:2, Bamidbar, we call it in Hebrew, and basically, on the Shabbat after Purim, this Shabbat, two Torah scrolls are removed from the Ark, and we read the Torah portion. And then from the second book, we read the chapter of the Parah Aduma, the red heifer, or red cow. And it gives the procedure through which people can purify themselves from the contamination caused by a human corpse. And this was a key procedure for when you're about to enter the Temple Mount and you wanted to purify yourself, you were not allowed to go up to the Temple Mount unpurified. The red heifer was prepared not far away from where I live on the Mount of Olives, and the head priest, the high priest himself, would cross over this bridge and fulfill this incredible and strange act, which is considered, the reason I say it's strange.
Which actually is deputy, by the way.
His deputy, he's number two.
Eleazar did it for Aaron.
Eleazar did it for Aaron, the son of Aaron. He did it. Still a high
big kahuna.
A big, that's right. He went out there, and then of course we replicated that in Jerusalem. And what's so interesting to me is that the Mount of Olives was even 4,000 years ago, before the Jews came, was a cemetery.
Mm-hmm.
Even then, and yet still, you go right into the heart of a cemetery and you perform this procedure on the red heifer. in order to create this bomb, this kind of solution that gets rid of the spiritual
impurity of the dead,
spiritual negative energy of the dead. And you know where you do it? You do it in an area that's a graveyard. Why? Because the Jewish people stick a finger right in the eye of death. We are the eternal people. We're going to walk right into your little playground, their cemetery. We're going to stick it right to you. We have an energy and ability to overcome the limiting aspect of death.
Because now you know how you stick a finger in the eye of death? With paradox. See, one of the problems with the way that we relate to God and religion, and even Torah, sadly, is thinking that it's about certainty. And we think it's about certainty, and so therefore paradox frightens us. Mm. Because of like the limitations that are there. By the way, the ultimate fear for sure is death. That's the ultimate limitation. You know, that's the ultimate boundary. And so the other fears that we have are sort of subcategories of that, which is why death is the archetypical impurity. Right? And you stick a finger in the eye of death by embracing paradox, because what you're saying is, you know what? The reality is I can't actually grasp it all. And there has been a rope that was thrown to me. There has been a line, a live connection that was given to me in order to know how to accept my limitations, ultimately to transcend them. Right? When you find paradox, especially in the text, I see this with my students all the time. It's like, but it says this and then it said that. Isn't that a contradiction? You know what I say to them? A contradiction is just a red flag that's been planted in the text saying, dig here. Because you've encountered the limitations of language to actually communicate to you the infinite.
You said some things there that really tremendously deep thoughts about really the nature of life and death. And I think what I also heard you say is that in death, there are the issues of haughtiness, in the sense that we want to control, we want to know, and then there's an element that we don't know, that we don't control, and it's very in our face. There's also the element of fear, which is overcoming fear. And in a sense, you're saying also that overcoming the energy of death is also overcoming the sense of fear, the sense of dread.
Yeah.
It gives us some step into the other world and into eternity.
And you can't do that with certainty. Mm-hmm. Because the human being is aware of how limited we are. All you have to do is look up at the sky at night and be aware that our intellect is just not big enough to grasp this.
I feel that way all the time. I walk around and I'm just like, this is all so beyond us. No matter how smart you are, you can't grasp it.
And when it's healthy, it's the opposite of fear, which is wonder. Right? Wonder. That's what paradox can open you up to. The wonder of how it is that I, as a limited being, could even have the conception of something infinite. You know what the beauty of this Torah portion is?
So wonder is the opposite of fear.
Well, wonder is also the opposite of doubt.
Right.
Because if you have doubt when it comes to God, you're not going to solve your problem by reducing God to what your mind can grasp. That's called idolatry.
Right.
When you reduce God to the human mind, that's idolatry. And there's a lot of idolatry masquerading as religion out there in the world today.
Seriously.
Because it's a worship of certainty, which is based on the human intellect. Whereas the opposite of doubt and its brother fear is wonder. Is not in the sense of, I wonder what it's going to be. It's no. You know what? I don't know. I wonder.
Right.
And the infinite potential that comes from that stance.
And of course, Maimonides tells us to reach the level of love of God. It's wonderment. It's looking around in kind of an amazement. Mm-hmm. And ironically, as smarter you get, the more you wonder, it's kind of childlike.
Mm-hmm.
There's a childlike simplicity in it all. You kind of look around, you're like, wow.
Yeah, I'm just not. This is too big for me.
I'm constantly, one of my parenting successes is that I've gotten my daughter to really love underwater films, stuff about fish.
Yeah.
You know, awesome. And we watch YouTube stuff about that's what my father gave to me, this like love of watching nature and stuff and just the wonderment of it, wonderment of it.
And one of the beauties is that when you can embrace the world that way, then you can see life as a gift as opposed to a burden.
Life is a gift and hanging out with you is a gift. And we are hanging out together here on Spiritual Cafe on the Ishai Fleischer Show. We're going to take a short break and we're going to be right back with more Red Heifer and things that are hard to understand, but give us that amazing sense that there's a God in this world. We'll be right back.
Well, I think it's very important that the Prime Minister make that speech, because Americans need to understand what the real threat of the Iranian government poses. Not just to Israel, but to the United States and to people all over the world.
That was Mike Huckabee, former Arkansas governor and presumptive presidential candidate for the 2016 elections. Get the full interview and video on national security with Dan Diker only on voiceofisrael.com.
All right, folks, we're back here on the Yishai Fleischer Show. We're talking Spiritual Cafe, getting ready for Shabbat with Rabbi Mike Foyer, as we do every week here on Thursdays. And we're talking Torah portion. We talked about the red heifer, which is so hard to understand. It's considered one of the kind of it's a paradigm of uncertainty, right? It's wonderment.
It is the quintessential chok, right? The type of law which we define as not being graspable by our intellect. You know what's called a chok? Because the word chok is related to chakak, right? What does chakak mean in Hebrew?
It's in legislate.
That's
the modern term.
That's the modern, right?
It's inscribe.
Yeah, engrave.
Engrave.
Yeah, you know what the difference between writing and engraving is?
Engraving lasts longer.
That's true also, right? But what I was thinking of is that when you write, you put one thing on top of another in order to convey information. Mm-hmm. Ink on paper. When you engrave, you remove something.
Mm-hmm.
Right, and the wisdom that is available in the chukim is the removal of that aspect of myself that needs to know, mm-hmm. that needs to believe I can know.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a tremendous wisdom in accepting that fact that sometimes you're just not going to know.
Last week you weren't here because of our conflicting Purim schedules. My Purim,
I have to admit that I don't regret it. It was a good Purim.
Good. Yeah. That's awesome. And I think you reached the prescribed...
I'm very careful with these commandments.
You were able to let go of consciousness and you were able to not distinguish between good and evil. I sadly don't think I reached that level.
I didn't bring anything.
Yeah, right. In any case, but we also didn't get a chance to talk about one of the most marvelous in terms of human dramatic. Well, it's not so human. It was the I thou moment. Of God meets man when Moses and God have this incredible interchange where God reveals himself like he has not revealed himself to any other human being. Moses comes down off the mountain, his face is aglow, amazing things.
Mm-hmm.
And this was all precipitated by an incredible act of distance.
Mm-hmm.
And that distancing was when the Jewish people made this golden calf. And there's a moment, this is how I describe it, where both Moses and God have this moment in the negotiating table where they're both about to walk away. Moses is like, if you're going to kill the Jewish people, I don't want any part of it. Erase me from the book. And God says, all right, you know what? I'll fulfill my part of the bargain, but I won't go up to the land of Israel. I'll just send an angel. They were both about to walk out on the negotiations.
Mm-hmm.
And instead, there's this incredible union that happens when God reveals to Moses these 13 attributes of faith. Excuse me, 13 attributes of atonement.
Mercy.
Mercy. But it's really, we call it really for...
The Yud Gimel Midot Rachamim.
Right, okay.
The 13 attributes of mercy.
Of mercy, right, okay.
But I think mercy contains within it both the faith and atonement. That's the context.
We use this language that God revealed to Moses as language of atonement, right? When we ask for atonement.
Well, we're asking for God's mercy on us because
yes.
Really it's not about our worthiness. It's about his mercy.
Now, the reason I'm raising this is because we're talking about the red heifer, which is this cleansing thing, and its counterpart is the golden calf.
Right, we've got cow issues.
Don't have a cow, man. We had a cow.
We had two cows.
Tell me a little bit about how you see the relationship between these two entities, this purifying one and this distancing one.
I think that they both, again, deal with the ultimate fear, and because part of the fear of death is being alone. And if you see what precipitated the whole event of the golden calf, right, Moses goes up on the mountain. Mm. And up until that point, people had been completely passive in the process of redemption, right? They'd just been following Moshe. He'd been doing everything. He split the sea. He brought the plagues. He said, go left, go right. Right? He goes away, and they're afraid because they say he's not coming back.
Right.
And what do we do? And we need something
tangible
to focus on, to lead us. Right? And that fear causes them to stumble. Right? In the same way that the sort of infinitely strange notion of the red heifer is a sign to us saying, even in the face of death, don't be afraid. I'm with you.
I think there's also the kind of a juxtaposition which you set up, which is the golden calf is like, I need to know. mm-hmm. and I need to control.
Mm-hmm.
And the answer is, here's a Torah commandment, which is, you will not know, you mm-hmm. will not control, and you will not understand. And that's the pathway to me. But does that mean that we're anti-intellectual on some level?
No, not at all. The intellect is the absolute necessary precursor to what we call emuna, faith. The key is, you know what emuna is with us? Emuna is using your intellect right up until the point where it's no longer an adequate tool.
Mm-hmm.
And in not one inch less and not one inch more. And that's what the golden calf is about. But you're that's what the red heifer is about. And the golden calf is about thinking that we can actually control it, right? That's why they dance in a circle around it, right? Because it's like everything's focused inward. There's no outside. There's no problems with the boundaries. And what's really fascinating, of course, what's Moshe's reaction when he sees the people dancing around the golden calf?
Well, first he smashes the Ten Commandments, the two tablets.
So that's the key.
Right.
And why? Why? What was he worried would happen there?
That they would use it? Is that what you mean?
Seems to be the most obvious answer, that if he had come down with the tablets and said, no, stop with the calf. Look, God gave me this. What would the people have done? They'd said, great. Here, put it in the middle, and we'll keep dancing.
Right.
You know what's my proof for this? The last Rashi in the whole Torah, right? When the last line of the Torah says, there's never been a prophet like Moshe who's done all these great signs and wonders in the eyes of all of Israel. So Rashi says, what did he do in the eyes of all Israel? Ah, that's where he broke the tablets.
Mm.
And God said to him, Yashar Koach, right? Go for it. That was good. Good move, Moshe.
I give appropriation to that.
Right.
So I back you on that one.
Wait, what? Are you kidding me? This is how Rashi ends the Chumash? That the greatest thing that Moshe ever did was break the tablets?
Jewish, man.
But you know why it is? It's because what Moshe was telling them is, look, I'm going to bring you down the law. But it's about the relationship. If you make the mistake of making this law into a golden calf and thinking you can control it, own it, know it all, and that it substitutes for the live relationship, which is always based on mystery. Your wife ever tell you that? Right? And my wife tells me all the time that women need to maintain some mystery in order that a relationship flourish. And it's true. So Moshe says, I'm going to tell you what it is, guys. Here's the law. Watch me smash it. Boom. Now that he makes new tablets. He brings the Torah. The law is there. But don't make the mistake. The law is a vessel for the relationship. Without the law, you have no vessel. So there's no relationship. But without the relationship, all you've got is the law. And that's not the point.
That's hollow. Yet, interestingly enough, though, there are Gemaras that say the opposite. There are Talmudic phrases that say, God says, I wish they would just keep my Torah and leave me out of it.
Well, I mean, you know why? Because then there's always the vessel. You can always fill a vessel which is empty. If you have no vessel, then you can't do anything about it, right? That's an educational approach. We see it constantly in the Torah, and I believe in it as an educator, that get people to do action. So like, we live in a world where people want to understand first. I hear this all the time from my students. You know, why is this relevant to me? And like, how can you explain to me why this is important? And I do it because, you know, you got to meet people where they're at. But part of me wants to say to them, look, you want to know why prayer is important? You get some tefillin, you go down to the kotel, and you do it for 40 days straight. I don't care if you understand it or not. Just go do it for 40 days and then come ask me the question. Mm-hmm. And it's a very different question from that place.
There's a psychological approach to that. I forgot the name of it. There's a specific psychological approach, which is just the study of action, the study of what people do, right?
Behavioralism,
right? So it's like, do it.
Well, this would be the positive side of behavioralism.
Right.
The negative side would say that the human being creates a fiction of meaning in order to justify behavior. What I'm saying is that actually behavior becomes a vessel for meaning.
Mm-hmm. But at the same time, the real purpose is not the vessel, but the real relationship.
But the relationship, yeah.
And don't make the vessel into an avodah zarah. Don't make it into an idolatry.
Yeah, but also don't make the mistake of thinking you can have the relationship without the vessel.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I mean, this is a common problem as well.
I just love the idea that like the penultimate moment of Moses is when he smashes the Ten Commandments.
Because that's when he showed he really got it.
By the way, importantly, the Ten Commandments that were smashed, the pieces were picked up.
Yes, and put in the ark next to the second set.
That's right. The broken pieces were there too.
And you know what God says to Moshe? God wrote the first tablets and he carved them. And then he says to Moshe, Psalacha. He says, you go carve them. But you know, you could read that line as carve yourself. Right? Because what he's saying to Moshe is that the first ones I gave you from the outside. And you can't have a relationship with something that comes from the outside. Now I want you to make yourself into the vessel and I'll come in.
Very deep stuff, my friends. Very deep stuff about the real nature of our relationship with God in this world, and that sometimes you need to, sometimes the vessels get broken, you know, and you got to pick up the pieces.
You got no other choice, man. You got no other choice.
And you know, the glue that holds it all together is love. That's what the glue that holds it all together. Our love for God, our love for that vessel that He gave us, the Torah, the wisdom, the love for Am Yisrael, the love of fellow Jews. Don't forget that Moses, even though he fights those Jews that made that golden calf, it's in order to really love the next generation, to teach, and that teaching is with us every single day and week in, week out. We read that Torah and we take it in these cycles all the way till the time of Mashiach. I want to thank Rabbi Mike Foyer.
Soon, let it be now.
Amen. And the temple is going to be built and come down at the same time very soon.
Amen.
Folks, thanks so much for being with us. Write me an email, yishai@voiceofisrael.com. Stay tuned, stay strong, and blessings. Shalom.
Voice of Israel, your source for news and views on everything Israel and the Middle East.